Blog Talk Radio.
With vacation upon us, and it is 70 degrees in New York, and I generally don't do this from a park, but I mean, why not today? Absolutely gorgeous. Granted, it's not Mr. Kamen's deck, and it's not his home, and there are a lot of people watching me and wondering what I'm talking about, but at the same time, World Cup on the horizon, and Manchester United with a new coach who I know very little, if nothing, about. So I bring in the soccer expert of the program, Mr. Kamens. Well, I certainly am not the soccer expert. Tell me a little bit about this coach.
Louis van Gaal. First of all, welcome to the show, everybody. And yes, for the second week in a row, Sean has opened with soccer, which kind of blows my mind a little bit. This would not have been where I would have gone, but regardless. Louis van Gaal,
well,
it
actually leads me into my next segue, so that's why I was going here. So, okay, coach in Netherlands, I'm sorry, continue.
All right, he's coached at Barcelona, he's coached at Bayern Munich, he's won the Champions League with Ajax, which is in Amsterdam, which is in another, a Holland team. Very well-respected coach, and after the real crap show you had last year at Man U, and also he's kind of keeping a tradition. Ryan Giggs, the all-time, probably one of the all-time greatest players for Man U, is going to become his number two. And they have a lot of work that has to be done, but it was an obvious choice, it seems. And, you know, this is somebody that, you know, it will gain respect right off the top of the bat. He, a bit of volatile, but a lot of respect from all over the world, from coaches, from players. So it seems like a legitimate fit for Red Devils.
So he's 62 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been recycled, for lack of a better term, right? He didn't come from his last job. He got fired from his last job. This isn't a guy that you plucked from somewhere else and knowing the English Premier League paid gazillions of dollars to get. Why him over anybody else, the rising star? Why is it, let me rephrase, why is it in the English Premier League that the newbies don't succeed and get blamed for not having experience, but the recycleds, and this reminds me of the NFL in like the 80s, continually get used and don't get any better?
Well, it's a good question. I think the idea being...
Thank you.
It's almost as if once you get to that top tier of coaches, and there's probably about 10 to 12 in the world, maybe 15, that all they really do is just rotate different places. And the only way to really break into that glass ceiling for all intents and purposes is to win a Champions League or to win a World Cup. Van Gaal has done that. But you see a guy, David Moyes, who went to Man U, who was an up-and-rising star for Everton. Now, Everton had a very nice – he did very well at Everton, but they made the Champions League once. They didn't succeed very well in it. They didn't go very far in it. And you see that the coaches – you know, it takes – you really have to break the glass ceiling for all intents and purposes, and then they're recycled into perpetuity. Jose Mourinho at Chelsea has been to Inter Milan, to Real. His career got big at a little team called Porto in Portugal, who won the Champions League. And that thrust him to Chelsea, where he was very successful. Now, of course, he's on his second runaround there. You have people like Carlo Ancelotti, who's been at Paris Saint-Germain and Chelsea and this and that. It does seem that the legends really very rarely retire. They just kind of rotate. And actually, Alex Ferguson, who was the Man U coach before that, is kind of the exception to the rule, having been there for approximately 20 to 25 years.
Well,
it just seems how it works in the soccer world.
But that's my question. Okay, so David Moyes got 1 year. He didn't even get a year, right? He got like half of a year, three quarters of a year. how do you break in that mold? And I think, and this is my segue to the NBA and the NFL, talking about coaching and coaching changes, is that
in the other two leagues, and I'm not saying that the EPL is the same, because granted, they pay gazillions of dollars, but how do you break into that without getting 80% of a year to do it? I mean, your team doesn't just totally, unless your name is Steve Fisher, who's the last guy that I know that took a team in the first year to a championship, and he didn't even get the first year. He took whatever, and he got them to the championship game. He didn't even get them to the championship. How do you get into that glass ceiling without having the chance to do it?
Well, pretty much the idea is if Moyes had Man U reach the Champions League, they didn't have to win a championship, but they've been in the Champions League probably 15 years in a row, 16 out of 17, something like that. And this team went from I think they won the title last year, if I remember correctly. You know, they did win the title. From winning the title last year, for no real major retirements, Paul Scholes, but to drop to seventh place, to eighth place, he's never going to get time when you're dropping that quick. The EPL has, and I can't really speak for La Liga or for Bayern Munich or the Bundesliga or for any of the other leagues, but they recycle about 35% of their coaches annually. There's 20 head coaches, and usually six are fired either during the year or after the year. And there is, because of the amount of money that is to receive from being part of the EPL, or even more from being part of the Champions League, for a team like Man U, not even being in the running for the Champions League is not an acceptable option, and that's why they get rid of Moyes.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. So what does Man U do? Excuse me. What does Man U do? I understand that they have a lot of older veterans coming off their salary structure. What are they looking to do in the offseason? I mean, they're a team without a salary cap. EPL doesn't have one. So spend as you wish, right? You're the George Steinbrenner of the EPL.
Yes, but there is a fair play rule that comes in, and I don't know the exacts of it, where there is some kind of salary. When the salaries escalate beyond something, there is a ban. There is a penalty. I don't quite understand it. You would have to bring in a soccer expert. But I know, like, Manchester City.
I thought
City
I had one. Wait. I thought I had one right here. Come on.
I am not a soccer capologist. But I know Man City has been banned this year, or they're taking a penalty. I know PSG in France is taking a penalty. And I think they're going to have to cut 40, 50 million off of their salary. I'm not 100% sure how that works, but it's some obscene number like that.
You know, absolutely incredible that number is. They have to cut 40 to 50 million off their cap. I mean, I was looking the other day, is it Messi that has like a 250 euro buyout or 150 million euro buyout? And I was like, how much is that in American dollars? And it was like $350 million. And you're kind of like, that's his buyout? That means in order for him not to play, you got to pay him that. Huh. Man, I got to learn how to play. I got to get a left foot. I mean, seriously, because this is ridiculous. This is more than Steinbrenner-ish.
Well, here we go. I'm actually opening it right now. Financial fair play. Manchester City and PSG are punished. They have been heavily sanctioned for breaching the new rules on financial fair play. I don't know exactly what the rules are. Oh, despite City and PSG exceeded the permitted losses of $62 million over the course of 2 years. City, which last week won the Premier League title for the second time in 3 years, said it would accept punishments including a fine of 60 million euro, which is $82 million, a restriction on transfer spending, and a reduction in the club squad size for the European Champions League. Of the fine, 12 million euro will be taken from earnings in this year's Champions League and the same amount from next year, while the rest will be returned if City meets its financial obligations over a 3-year period. Kind of terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder where they're getting their money from, right?
Well, Man U gets it because it's run by a sheik out of Abu Dhabi. And PSG is run by the Qatar Investment Authority.
Oh.
So, there you go.
Yeah, I got to get in that.
Yeah,
somehow.
Man City made a record British loss of $307 million in 2010 and 11, and $192 million loss the year before, all of which were covered by the billionaire. In 2012, its deficit was $160 million, last year $87 million, but the club says it expects to break even for the period ending May 31st.
Hmm.
So, yeah, there you go. The financial fair play rules are supposed to stop clubs getting into unmanageable debt or allow wealthy benefactors to give top teams an unfair advantage.
Well, then, it certainly does that. So, moving on to my segue. So, from the teams, coaches, and recycle them, to teams that say, what the hell, let's just hire guys that came off the court last year, the league, I'm sorry, that says let's take guys that come off the court last year, out of the broadcasting booth last year, we have the NBA, where Steve Kerr told Phil Jackson, no thank you. Stan Van Gundy decided to become a president. Ron Jeremy became the president of the team. Let's put it that way.
Boom,
and the coach.
I wish I had porn music kind of on the computer right now. I think that would go well.
There you go. Put your bam, bam, and okay. Anyway. And then you have rumors out of, and this is the biggest one, rumors out of Utah that Earl Watson is being considered for the Utah job. Earl Watson. So, I mean, and Derek Fisher is being considered now for the Knicks job. So from the league that recycles coaches, and granted, the NBA went through this phase too, to now the league that is just taking them off the court, did Jason Kidd's move have anything to do with this or the success?
Well, I guess it depends if you consider the Jason Kidd move a success. I think the Utah, you know, look, we know Phil Jackson wants a guy who can run the triangle offense in New York. Fisher played for him in L.A. He knows the offense. Steve Kerr is gone. The other options aren't really that enticing, although the rumor is that they were going to try and trade a first-round pick for Brian Shaw. And I don't know what first round pick that would be. 18 or 20.
Yeah, 18. The Nets can trade the 20 pick.
It's hard to keep up. Jackson is really painting himself into a corner. You know, he wants to run an offense that nobody is really sure is suited for their best player, who they may or may not re-sign, and really not of their choice either way. They're a team that's over the cap. They're a team that doesn't really seem to have much youth. It's really a no-win situation in New York. Utah, as strange as it sounds, because they've been terrible the last 3 or 4 years, since the Darren Williams, Carlos Boozer Carlos Boozer leaving, and Darren Williams being traded to the Nets, you do have some young talent. Alec Burks, Trey Burke, Derek Favors. I mean, I'm assuming Gordon Hayward is going to leave. The press is a little bit kinder in Salt Lake City than it is on the Avenue of the Americas.
Sure.
So,
I wouldn't necessarily think that Gordon Hayward's actually going to leave. In fact, he was the guy that suggested Watson get hired. So let's see if Watson gets hired, let's see if Hayward stays too. Remember, Hayward's a restricted free agent, so they can match any contract that they get for him. So just to put that out there. But if I had Utah's team in New York, let's just say if I was a New York Knicks fan and they had Utah's talent, he is all could be. I mean, they have one of the best young cores in the NBA. They're a little mismanaged in where their positioning are. They have two centers, which can't play together, and Enes Kanter and Derek Favors. They have two shooting guards. Trey Burke's really not a point guard, although he played one on TV. And Gordon Hayward is miscast as a number one. If they got Jabari Parker or somebody like that, it'd be phenomenal. And speaking of which, the lottery is tonight.
It is, and the rumor is that Parker is actually moving somewhat down in the draft rankings. He's supposedly out of shape, gotten a bit heavy, didn't work out at the combine, and then you had Dante Exum, who came in from Australia, who apparently blew everybody away with his athletic skill. He didn't play at the combine, but he is apparently a top three candidate right now. And in a draft as deep as this, it says quite a bit.
Well, remember also, two things. A, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And number two, you're always enamored with the next best thing, right? I mean, that's in life. You're always looking for what could be better, or better yet, what's more exciting today rather than the constant that you've had for a while. The exciting thing is better, and sometimes it's just new. Dante Exum, to me, is just new. I'm not saying he won't be a great player, but for the people that saw him, it might have been the first or second time that they actually saw him, as opposed to Jabari Parker, who went through a whole season of people basically, dissecting his game. So I'm not sure that Dante Exum is the right pick, and in a couple of weeks we'll get into our NBA draft preview, and we'll see where we feel these players will go. But if Jabari Parker's dropping down the boards, nobody's happier than Utah.
I have no response. I mean, for those of you who are listening, Jabari Parker is a Mormon and a devout member of the church.
And even for those of you that are not listening, Jabari Parker is a Mormon.
That is true. They just may not know that because they're not listening. But
true story.
Thank you. And a devout member of the Church of Latter-day Saints, and actually was pretty much one of the – it was deciding between Duke and BYU. And while BYU has a nice basketball team, it's certainly not a powerhouse. And it was also a consideration he was going to take a Mormon mission for 2 years. Although I don't know how serious that is, considering, his basketball ability. So playing in Utah would probably be the dream of all the Jazz fans out in Provo and Salt Lake. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a fun draft to discuss. It's as deep a draft as any of us can really remember. And coming off a really good college basketball season, always previewing the draft is always fun. By the way, who ended up winning the NFL draft? Was it you or me? Or did you not
win? Oh, I lost. I didn't even look, but I lost. There's no doubt that I lost. None.
I finally beat you in something?
You beat me in something. Yeah, give yourself a pat on the back. All right, anyway, moving on. I'll get you back on the NBA draft. Although, I'll tell you, the best part about the NBA draft right now to me is that there is no consensus number one. That's what makes it a fun draft. That's what made the NFL draft a fun draft. It wasn't a Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning going to be number one draft. I have no idea who's going to be number one. And that, to me, makes it a much more interesting draft than anything else. But we went from the hirings of Steve Kerr and maybe Earl Watson and maybe Derek Fisher. There was another hire this week, and that was Stan Van Gundy up in Detroit. What do you think of that hire?
I like it. I think it's interesting. I think Van Gundy is a disciplinarian, and I'm curious to see how he's going to blend with Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings, to be honest. But I think he went there to be able to buy the groceries. And I think he went there really for Andre Drummond. I'm sure it kind of reminds him of his early days with Dwight Howard, before Dwight pretty much threw him under the bus. He's going to have he's not going to have total control, but he's going to have a lot of control. He's going to hire the GM, which kind of says everything. It kind of says it all. He's going to be he'll be one of the main people making their pick wherever it may be. And they're a team I don't know how much – I don't know where they go. Do you trade Greg Monroe? He's a restricted – do you do a sign and trade with Monroe? Do you let him go? Do you re-sign him and play the double big? And then you have Josh Smith for 3 years. You have Jennings for two. You drafted Caldwell Pope from Georgia last year. It's a mishmash of players. But if they'll listen to Van Gundy, this is a team I thought was going to make the playoffs last year, and I think certainly has the talent to do it this year, especially with lottery pick coming up.
Well, the thing about Van Gundy is, and I was reading a Sports Illustrated article on this, which was very good. I don't remember who wrote it, but if you look on SI.com, you certainly get it. And the funny thing is, Van Gundy didn't sign this contract, according to this writer, because he wanted to pick the groceries. The last two times that Van Gundy had a problem and got fired, it wasn't because of production at all. I mean, if you look at what he did in Orlando, he took them to the finals, right? A couple of times. Mm-hmm. I think one time and then made the semis a couple of times. When he was in Miami, he took them to the cusp of a championship before Pat Riley stepped in, right? I mean, that was the Dwayne Wade, Shaquille O'Neal year. So before he stepped aside. In either concept, it wasn't because of the basketball players and his coaching ability that got him canned, removed, resigned, however you want to put it. It was because of the office politics involved. So according to this writer, Van Gundy took the job because if any of those players have a problem with Van Gundy, they have to go back to Van Gundy because he's the president. There's nobody above him. There's nobody that can say, you know what, you got a problem, come to me, and I'll go and talk to Van Gundy. No. He's the judge, jury, and executioner for the Detroit Pistons. I think for that reason, he's going to succeed. Josh Smith can't go running to the GM and say, I want him gone, because guess what? And well, supposedly it's going to be Otis Thorpe. But guess what Otis Thorpe's going to go do? Go talk to the president, who happens to be Sam Van Gundy. So, I mean, I think in that concept, he's in the perfect situation for him. He can lean on the people that know the basketball draft. He doesn't have to make the pick. He can lean on the GM to do the contract. But he doesn't have to do... He doesn't have to pick the groceries, but if he wants to, he can. And if the groceries go sour, well, guess what? They have to come and talk to him anyway. So I think it was a tremendous move by him. And you're right. They do have an exorbitant amount of talent on that team. The question is, can they put it all together? Josh Smith is the most untradeable contract in basketball right now. 3 years, I think it's $56 million. For a guy that likes to shoot long twos. Kind of reminds me of Carmelo without any touch. So the question is, can they succeed with this team? Well, I don't doubt Sam Van Gundy's talent as a coach whatsoever.
Yeah, I guess it constitutes what you consider success. Is this a championship caliber team? Obviously, not as far as I can tell. But if Drummond can become a dominant center, Monroe is a very good four, and there is a lot of talent. So you could see the team becoming a constant playoff fixture under Van Gundy. And who knows, maybe in a year or two, if Miami kind of runs into the sunset, we'll talk a little bit about that later on, Indiana's going to dissipate a little bit. So there, you know, who knows where we're looking 2 or 3 years from now, but right now, they look like a playoff team to me. They look like a playoff team by talent anyway. And, you know, it just goes from there.
Well, Seth, we said this in the preseason. This team is young, like incredibly young. Monroe's only about 23. Drummond's 20. I mean, Pope is 24. Smith, I believe, is 28. Jennings is 27. I mean, this is not an old team. This is a team that can learn and grow. And as long as Monroe is re-signed, the core is still there. And if they trade Monroe and move Smith back to the four, I think they'd actually be better off. But it depends on who they can get for him. And you put a draft pick in there. I don't know if they have their draft pick this year. In fact, I'm almost sure they don't.
I think
for some reason.
It may have been something with the Ben Gordon, Corey Maggette
trade. Yeah, this is the Ben Gordon trade. So if it's outside of the top eight, I don't believe they get, and I think they're right now number nine. So if they don't jump in the lottery, they will lose their pick this year. So just a side note. But you segued very well. You segued very well because I picked the Trailblazers to win their series. Obviously, I was a little wrong. Not a little wrong. They've been played out by the Spurs. Ridiculously played out. The Spurs may be the most underappreciated team in basketball for like the last 30 years. They win championships, but nobody considers them elite. They consider the coach elite. They consider Duncan elite. But as a team, this team very much reminds me of an under-respected Bad Boys.
Except that their reign has lasted much longer.
Yeah.
They've won, what, four titles in 14 years? Something like that?
Yep.
Kind of reminds me of the New Jersey Devils, actually. Except
that's a good comp. I like that.
That when the Devils didn't make the championship, the Devils, I believe, won 3-10 and went to two other finals. But when they didn't hit that range, they barely made the playoffs. San Antonio, even at their worst, lost to the Lakers once, I think, twice with the Kobe Shaq in the conference semis and lost. You know, they were always a threat. They're incredibly underrated because their stars. They're a team led by possibly the greatest power forward of all time who has no interest in publicity. Their coach hates publicity. They play in a town that is probably the third or fourth biggest in Texas. It's a minor media market. And they've become so consistent, it's almost boring. Except they're very entertaining to watch. And what's so interesting is that the players are all interchangeable. Except for the big three. And now you have Kawhi Leonard, who's obviously come in and is really significant. But, you know, out goes one shooter, in comes Bellinelli. You know, out comes Gary Neal, in comes Danny Green. I mean, they just always seem to find a way to fit. And Oklahoma City without Ibaka, I am not the world's biggest Ibaka fan, but I don't think they can win the series without him.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. I mean, I don't think they can win the series without him. So there you have San Antonio against either Miami or Indiana. And, damn, that's a good series, but Indiana sure took it to them, didn't they?
They did. I think the series is really contingent on tonight. I think whoever wins tonight wins the series. I took Indiana to win the championship in the beginning of the year and then, of course, took Washington to beat – completely changed my mind and took Washington to beat them in the semis because they've looked awful. And they didn't look great. That was the best game I believe they've played in about 3 months. And obviously I haven't seen every Pacer game, but that was a team that we were expecting to see in the second half of the year, and they just didn't exist. They didn't play like that against Atlanta. Now, they're not going to shoot that well again. The reality is, 2 through 12, they're more talented. It's a question of, can LeBron really carry this team at this point? Chris Bosh does not play well against Indiana. Wade, is somewhat nullified by the athleticism of Stevenson. By talent alone, Indiana probably should win the series. But Indiana does not have LeBron James, and that may make all the difference.
Well, agreed. I mean, that's been the case for the last 2 years. I mean, if you don't have LeBron James, you haven't won. But that brings up 2 points to me. Number one, we discussed this earlier, if Indiana is going to continue and succeed in the conference with Detroit, and the fact is Lance Stevens is a free agent after this year. So I think that's a big concept if Indiana is going to re-sign him. Because if they don't, they lose a lot. I mean, I've been very impressed with what Stevenson has done, especially in the first game. I mean, he was the glue to that team. Him and Hibbert were running pick and rolls like crazy. So I think the old straw that stirs the drink, to quote Reggie Jackson, he is that for Indiana right now. Without him, I think that team is no better than a 500 team. And that's saying a lot. I mean, but I think he really puts that together. They are one of the more balanced teams, if not the most balanced team outside of San Antonio in the NBA.
Yeah, I can just imagine ESPN's nightmare. And it would actually be the series that I would prefer, would be San Antonio, Indiana.
Yep.
But you're just not going to get a big draw for that one.
Nope.
And I agree. Their Indiana is very balanced. Paul George is an all-star. Hibbert is an all-star. I disagree they would be a 500 team. David West would not let that team be a 500 team.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
But they would not be a championship caliber team without him. And
well,
it's going to be, I
Lance,
think, you know,
without Lance Stevenson, they don't have, I mean, I like George Hill. I do. But George Hill in game one was a spot-up shooter. He had no assists through three quarters. Zero. The guy that had the most assists on that team was David West. And he actually averaged the most assists in the playoffs so far for the Pacers. But Stevenson's the one that pushes that ball. I mean, there is nobody on that team that pushes the ball like him and allows George to run. George is not a great ball handler. So you need somebody to push the ball to get him in the open court, and that's what Stevenson does. He's the one that turns that pace up.
Yes, he's...
Sorry, go ahead.
There
was
you.
Something that was interesting that Mark Jackson brought out on the telecast. And I, you know what, welcome back, Mark Jackson, because I love listening to Mark Jackson on TV. Mark Jackson pointed out, he said, either Van Gundy or Jackson said this, and the other one questioned it. I think that Jackson said that Bosch is a surefire Hall of Famer. And Van Gundy goes, are you sure? Like, is he really a Hall of Famer? And I bring that to you, Mr. Kimmins. Is Chris Bosh a Hall of Famer? Is Dwayne Wade a Hall of Famer? We know LeBron's a Hall of Famer. I mean, and I think you've come around to the idea that he may be the best of all time. So I'm using my hand gesture as to come around. I think you've come around to that, to maybe that point. Other two, are they better than Scottie Pippen? Was Scottie Pippen a Hall of Famer? I mean, or are they just sidekicks?
Well, Dwayne Wade is a Hall. I don't think Dwayne Wade's a discussion point. I think Dwayne Wade is a Hall of Famer. I think when it's all said and done, Dwayne Wade probably goes down as one of the five best shooting guards of all time.
Okay.
Obviously his career, what his career length may preclude him from that, but his performance in the 06 series, or the 06 or 08, I forget which one, series, I guess it was 08, was one of the, would threaten Jordan or LeBron or anyone with what he did. A 10-time All-Star, tough guy, good defender, or was at one point. His body just hasn't held up. I don't think there's three championships, four appearances in the finals. I think he's a Hall of Famer. Bosch is a different sport. Bosch is a tough call. Bosch, to me, is a real borderline case. I've had this discussion actually with Nabate Isles about it. And Nabate thinks he's a surefire Hall of Famer. But, you know, we talk about, and I'm tougher on Hall of Famer than you are. I'm tougher than probably Nabate is. I think it's a hall of great. Chris Bosh is very good. Now, yes, he was a 2010 guy in Toronto. I believe they won one playoff series in 7 years he was there, 6 years he was there. And then he very easily became a third, you know, a third banana in Miami.
Well, right now, I believe he's, right now he's the second banana.
Because Wade's hurt.
Well, you do what you can, you do what you need to
right.
do, right? I mean,
right.
Tony Parker's now the second banana, and Ginobili's the third. They
yes.
flipped.
Yes. Bosch. I think Bosch is a borderline case, but it's probably unfair to him because he's probably been an all-star 8 years, 9 years, 6 years.
Yep.
So he'll probably be a 10-time all-star. So I find it really hard to now to preclude him from the Hall of Fame if you end up being a double-digit all-star. If Mitch Richmond, who is one of my favorite players of all time, is a Hall of Famer, I don't know how Chris Bosch isn't.
Well, I think that says something. I'm not a big proponent of using all-star voting as
Agreed.
Hall of Fame. In fact, I'm anti it. I mean, baseball being the number one culprit. But, I mean, you've had guys that have been all-stars like Charles Oakley. Charles Oakley wasn't an all-star. He's not an all-star player. I mean, he's just not. Antonio Davis was on the all-star team. Also not an all-star.
Of course.
He had... So, I mean, using that as a barometer, if you use that as a barometer, Bill Walton's
no.
not a Hall of Famer, right? I mean.
No, okay, wait. It's certainly not a sole reason, but this is not, you know, Antonio Davis was an All-Star once, maybe twice. If you're a double-digit
yep.
All-Star, that's a bit of a something.
You're a popular guy.
He ain't that popular. He plays in a team that's hated by the other 31 teams in the league. He ain't that beloved.
Fair enough. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I do. For the reasons that you suggested, you would probably downplay him because he picked to go to Miami.
Yes.
I mean, the same – but – If you're going to say that...
No, I don't think that's fair. I downgraded James for going to Miami because James' aspiration was not to be a Hall of Famer. James was a Hall of Famer by the end of his rookie year, for all intents and purposes. You knew if he stayed healthy, he was going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
James' aspiration to be to be the greatest player of all time. And that's a very different set of standards.
Okay. Look, I see where you're coming from. I think Bosch is a Hall of Famer. I think the fact that teams, and this is another problem that I have, is that just because one player doesn't win playoff series doesn't necessarily mean that they're not Hall of Fame players. I mean, how many playoff series did Ted Williams win? And I understand
probably,
that's a different game, but it's the same argument. I understand that there were less playoffs, too, when you're dealing with baseball than you are with basketball. But you're still a part of a team, right? You're not the sole player, unless your name is Michael Jordan or LeBron James and you're being labeled one of the greatest of all time. Chris Bosh doesn't dominate the game, no question. And I don't think he ever will or ever would. But like you said, I don't think Mitch Richmond dominated James. And I think Chris Bosh actually had more of an influence when he was in Toronto than Mitch Richmond ever did on any team.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, the comp to me with Mitch Richmond is Chris Webber. With Chris Bosh is Chris Webber. That's the guy I like to compare him to.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable argument. I think Weber was actually a better player, but I think it's reasonable. I think Weber was just so immensely talented in just so many other facets of the game. Although Bosch was a better three-point.
You still there?
Well, I think we lost that, which is a big problem considering he's manning the call.
Sorry about that, everybody. It looks like my phone looks like I got disconnected, and by coincidence, so did you.
Extension.
Back
by
on.
Extension.
That was the word I was looking for. Damn SATs, SAT verbal. We were talking about Weber. I mean, Weber to me was one of the most immensely talented power forwards of all time. He was a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. Did he live up to his potential? I don't know. He was certainly not the best. He was certainly not when you come up with the greatest clutch players of all time. His name usually doesn't come on that list. But he was a wonder. He would have been a perfect number two on a championship team. And, you know, I like McPherson a lot, but come on. I guess the other big basketball news we should discuss, and probably the least surprising news of the week, Kevin Love has announced he will be testing free agency after this year.
Wow, what a shock.
What a shock. You can live in Minnesota with a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 7 years, or you can do anything else. So Minnesota has decisions to make. Do you trade him now? Do you wait? Do you trade him at the All-Star break? Do you keep him? Try and build a team around him that suddenly wins close games and convinces him to stay. Now, I mean, this is all silly because for some reason Minnesota's old GM decided that Kevin Love is not worth a max contract.
No, the fifth year of the max contract.
It's not,
he got
exactly.
The four-year max contract. He didn't get the fifth-year max contract.
Right.
Because they were saving that for Ricky Rubio. Right. Con!
Oh. Good to see a Bill Simmons reference every now and again. There are a couple places he would fit in perfectly, and the rumors are pretty rampant. Golden State being a pretty obvious choice. David Lee and Harrison Barnes. Chicago.
That ain't gonna get it done. That ain't gonna get it done.
You think they'd have to throw it? You think they'd have to change Harrison for Iggy or throw in a first round pick?
All right. So here's the scenario. It's from the cap point of view. Okay. If you're Minnesota and you know you're losing him after this year, right? Do you trade him? He's about $14 million on the cap this year. Or if you're Kevin Love and you want – so if Minnesota's trading him and they know they're losing him anyway, they'll trade him to whoever they want to trade him to, right? Because that
right.
way they get the most bang for their buck. Now, if you're Kevin Love and you want to dictate where this process goes because you have the right – you can do that. You know how you do that? You do exactly what Dwight Howard did. You said, and yes, I'm saying Dwight Howard did something smart. He didn't do something smart at the time, but he definitely did something smart now. You opt in. You do what Chris Paul did. And you say, I'm going to stick around for that fourth year. He's got a fourth-year option. I'm going to stick around for that fourth year. And by doing that, he can control where he goes. Because if Minnesota makes a deal with Charlotte and Kevin Love doesn't want to go there, he says, look, I'm not going to opt in. And if I don't opt in, you only get me for 1 year. But if he does want to go to, say, Golden State, and he tells Golden State, I'm going to stay there for 2 years at least, maybe re-sign after that, but definitely for 2 years, they will likely give more of a package to Minnesota. And that way
yeah.
he controls the process.
That's exactly what Chris Paul did. And then, of course, the NBA denied the trade. But that's another story.
No, that's not true either. He opted in to the Clippers, too.
Right. But originally it was going to be for the Lakers.
Right, but he could have opted out through. He wanted to go to L.A.
Yes.
Didn't matter which
right.
team.
True.
So if you're Golden State, let me ask you this. If you're Golden State and Minnesota comes up to you and says,
Kevin Love wants to go there. He'll stay there for at least 2 years. He says he's going to opt in. We want David Lee and Klay Thompson. What do you do?
If I'm going to State, that is a tough call. I think I do it because I think a team, a triad of Kevin Love, Iguodala, and Stephon Curry. I mean, your starting five is the three of those. Harrison Barnes, assuming his game picks up after a pretty bad year this year. And Andrew Bogut, if he can stay healthy, that's a championship-caliber team. I think you have to do it.
And you got Damon Green there, too. I mean, you got other players. It's not just those three. So let me go the other way. If you're Minnesota and you're saying, you say to Golden State, and Golden State says, no, I'm not going to do that, but I'll give you Harrison Barnes, our number one pick, and David Lee. And their number one pick is probably 14 or 15 at this point. Maybe a little lower, maybe 18. Did they win a playoff series?
No, they lost the first round.
So figure it's 17. So we're going to give you the number 17 pick. We're going to give you Harrison Barnes, and we're going to give you David Lee. Do you take that if you're Minnesota?
I think you have to seriously consider it because Minnesota does not have a hell of a lot of leverage here. They have enough to a point where they can say, okay, you know what, open season, and you know Chicago is going to make an offer. I'm sure Houston will probably try and come up with a way to make an offer. The problem that Minnesota has is getting free, clearing cap room doesn't do a hell of a lot of good when nobody's going to go play there. And you're never going to get a top. You're never going to get a top tier player. It would be very difficult to get a top tier player to go to Minnesota.
Well, and that, Seth, is why if I'm Minnesota, I hold out for Klay Thompson. For that very reason, Klay Thompson is on his first contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's on a rookie contract. Nobody that I recall says no to the second contract. The second contract is the big money contract, the first time you're seeing big money. Okay? Nobody says no to that. So even Kyrie, despite what you hear, Kyrie Irving's not saying no to that this summer. He's going to take a max deal with Cleveland.
Yeah.
So if you're Minnesota and you're thinking nobody's going to come here anyway, right? Nobody.
Right.
I got to risk going after the guy that I want because to fill up cap room with mediocre players doesn't do me a hell of a lot of good.
Agreed.
And that's basically what you're getting. You're getting Harrison Barnes, who while was the number 6 pick in the draft, I believe, maybe 7, and David Lee, who is a, 19-8 guy? But he's an empty 19-8 guy.
Yeah.
So, and he's a defensive nightmare. He's the only guy that I think that's worse defensively than Kevin Love. So, I mean, are you really improving your team rather than taking another year of Kevin Love and saying and daring him to test free agency? And saying, go, you turn down $16 million more by coming here, by staying here. Go for it. Try and do it. I don't see any other team in the NBA that has the assets that Golden State does to make this trade. Maybe Phoenix. Phoenix might have it. But that's about it.
See, I know people are talking about it. But unless you include Eric Bledsoe in that deal, I don't see what they have.
Well, and that's what I'm – or you include Gordon Dragic.
You have to include one or the other. I think that's
okay,
a given.
Okay, if you include Bledsoe in that deal and you include 2 first-round picks from Phoenix, if you're Minnesota, you take that and run to me. If you include Dragic, you kind of think about it, because I think Bledsoe has a higher upside.
Probably
Houston does. Houston doesn't have the pieces. The Lakers don't have the pieces.
No.
The only thing the Lakers can offer is this year's first-round pick to the draft. So basically they'd be trading the pick that they are and they don't have next year's first-round pick. So what else are you dealing? I mean, there's not Pau Gasol in a sign-in trade? That's horrendous. That's a horrendous return if you're Minnesota. Pau Gasol and, say, the fourth pick in this year's draft for Kevin Love? I don't think it's horrendous, but, well, let me backtrack. I don't think it's horrendous, but I don't think it's value. I think I'd take the Klay Thompson deal any day.
Agreed. Now, the question also would be, is Golden State willing to give up Klay Thompson?
Well, that's what I asked you first. I said, if you're Golden State, do you make that deal? I think if you're Golden State, you make that deal because it's much easier to find a shooting guard than it is to find a power forward that can shoot like Kevin Love.
Yes. And what'll be good, and what would be nice about him being on the team is he doesn't have to be the number one. He could be a very, very high number two, because I think Curry is the number one player on that team. And then you have the glue guy in Iguodala. Now, the question is, if they ask for Iguodala, if Minnesota asks for Iguodala, then...
Iguodala and David Lee will not fit under the cap.
That's what I figured.
You would have to add a lot more coming back, and Minnesota would have to put... sorry, their center. I can't remember his name, but their center
Petrovic.
Right, him, Kevin Martin, or Rubio. None of which fit in Golden State.
Right.
And if you're Minnesota, you don't want Iguodala.
No. He's not.
Because Iguodala doesn't do anything for a team that needs everything. He does the little things, but he's not a number one.
No.
And he's a defensive guy. Okay.
Yeah. He's a good all-around player. He's a number three. He is not a number one by any stretch.
Right.
He's a number three on the offensive end.
Yeah. So he's a great glue guy, and that's what he's good at. Well, but Minnesota doesn't need glue guys. They need guys. And they need guys. Remember, Iguodala is 28 years old. They don't need 28-year-olds with $14 million on their cap. I think it's 12, actually. 12 million, 4 years, 48. 12 years on their cap. They need Klay Thompson, who's coming, who has one more year on his rookie, and then can persuade him to stay by offering him the most money, by a lot. So, yeah, I think that's the ticket. I think that's the trade that they have to look to make. And if they can't make that trade, I dare Kevin Love to play another year in Minnesota. I really do. I think the Knicks, more than any other team, have tested the theory of mediocrity on your cap and it not working. Or even the Bulls with Carlos Boozer. And I don't think the Bulls have much to offer either. I mean, if you're the Bulls, what are you offering? Jimmy Butler, Carlos Boozer, and the number one? That's not getting that done.
Does nothing for me. Yeah, I agree. Taj Gibson is an impact player where he is. I think the system fits him well.
The other thing about Taj Gibson is Taj Gibson is earning $9 million a year.
Yeah.
So if they throw, and I can't remember the Spanish guy's name that's coming over supposedly.
Calatovich.
Yeah, him, a first-round pick, and Jimmy Butler. I still don't think that gets it done. And none of those are better than Klay Thompson. None of them.
No, we have no idea what Calatovich brings. But I don't know if he's Spanish. I just know he plays for Real Madrid. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun story. I mean, hopefully, I shouldn't say that because with LeBron, it wasn't fun. With Dwight Howard, it was an absolute disaster. Hopefully, one way or the other, it gets resolved relatively quickly. But I don't know that I think it will.
Well, so. The thing is also, Kevin Love so far has not struck me as a prima donna.
No.
He says, I want this, and then he shuts up. That's it. He doesn't bitch about anything. Well, I mean, he bitched originally, but then he got Rick Adelman, so he didn't bitch. I mean, he's consistently said the same thing. I want out. That's okay. I don't mind somebody consistently saying I want out because you stuck to the same script. It's the flip-flopping of Dwight Howard that we all got annoyed about.
That's true.
So, no big deal. Leave it. We are almost in June, and we really, other than our preview, have not really talked baseball on the show.
Base what?
Right, exactly. Base what? By the way, the World Cup starts what? 2 weeks?
June 12th.
June 12th,
3 weeks.
So the week before that, we should be having our World Cup preview, I would think. Now, that requires me to do a little bit of reading. But
well, I think the bigger problem would be is I'm going to be in Costa Rica for the week before.
Oh, that's right.
So we may have
and
to
I'll
do
be
it
in Chicago.
So that may be, wow, that may be next week. Good.
What's that?
That may be next week we do it.
Yeah.
Or we can do it or 3 days in.
We'll get it done. We'll get it done.
We always do. Yeah.
We always do. We're a good team that way. We'll always get it done. We're here to serve the public, and you guys are interested in the World Cup. So you know what that means? Sean K. Palmer has to learn a little bit more about soccer rather than just the headline news. I have to learn who that guy named Messi is, and there's a guy named Rooney, too, somewhere. And they earn a lot of money, but I don't have a clue why Rooney earns that much, considering I don't see him as that great a player. But who knows? But we'll talk about that more in a couple of weeks. So how much time do we have left? Because I'm still walking around this park in New York, and I feel like I've walked in circles for the last 45 minutes.
We probably have. We have 2 minutes. We want to do a quick talk. That's it. You want to do a quick talk about the hockey, about the NHL?
No, I don't. go Canadiens. Go Canadiens. Wait, we have 2 minutes left in the whole show?
Yep.
Oh, well, I have two things to say then, and then I will log off. One, go Canadiens, although I think you don't have a shot in hell of winning, but I hate the Rangers so much. And a very happy birthday in advance to Seth's girlfriend, Carly Fink.
Aw. Bleh. Yeah,
hey,
happy.
You know what? Come on. Give them a minute.
It was a nice olive branch. And, yes, happy birthday to my wonderful, wonderful girlfriend who is not listening to me, who doesn't listen to the show. But, doesn't listen to me, comma. Doesn't listen to me, period. Doesn't listen to the show, additional.
Period.
But she's still a wonderful girlfriend, and I adore her. So three of us and five other lucky sorts will be up in Rhode Island. Hopefully, I was looking to see if we could hit a Pawtucket Red Sox game, but that's not going to happen.
Ooh.
They're away. Maybe go up to Boston. Who knows? But it should be a fun weekend. Hopefully, everybody is on good behavior and everyone has a few drinks and enjoys, and the weather holds out. And we will be back next week. I guess the only story, and it's not sad because it's kind of hard to be sad when you're worth $700 million, but Vince McMahon lost a third of his wealth in one day.
Yeah, I saw that. I laughed.
Yeah, well, it's a lot easier to laugh when you're sleeping on $1,000 bills. And
that's
to go
right.
down
for the million-dollar man.
Well, that was Ted DiBiase.
Yep.
But, yeah, from a billion to $700 million, life is tough up in Stamford, Connecticut. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens. The Seth and Sean Radio Show for Blog Talk Radio, backsportspage.com. Good night, everybody.
Night.